It is good to have all of you who are here tonight to continue our studies that we're conducting this week. I want to remind you of a few of the things that we stated last night. I told you that I was going to study lessons this week designed to help us to have a better relationship with God, to help us draw nearer unto Him. So as we began our study, I said that God had a plan, and that it was not a haphazard thing that God has done throughout the Bible. He's not haphazard, but it is a thing which He planned. And in keeping with that plan, He made promises and prophecies which came to pass. We also noted passages in the New Testament which state that this plan of God was from of old, from the beginning, from before the foundation of the world, and so on. One of the things that God desired, well, a great part of His plan was to have a holy nation. In connection with this, we looked at the life of Abraham, and we looked particularly at Genesis 18 and verse 19, where God said, I have known Abraham for this reason, that he may command his children after him so that they could walk in my ways, and so on. In other words, God called Abraham to have a relationship with Him, and that relationship consisted of walking in the ways of God, walking in the teachings, walking in the commandments of God. We also referred to Genesis chapter 12, where God made promises to Abraham. One of those promises was that he would make of him a great nation. We made the point that the idea of the great nation here was not merely the number, but it was the quality. The quality. What kind of a nation was this? So in connection with that idea, we brought up Genesis 18:19, that Abraham was to teach his children, command them, who would follow after him, to do the will of the Lord. We also went to Exodus 19, and I remember that I never did really follow through on that particular point, but it is in keeping with what I'm going to do tonight, so I'm going to sort of go back to that one for a moment, in Exodus chapter 19, and in verses 4 through 6, God says, Moses, I want you to tell the children of Israel that you have seen what I did unto the Egyptians and how I bare you on eagle's wings and brought you unto myself. And as he goes on talking about what he expects of his people in connection with his covenant that he's going to make, he wants them to obey his word, really and truly wants them to obey his word, not just making a profession, not just making a claim, but actually doing it. Now, if you will look in verse 6 there, he speaks of what he expects Israel to be. And what he expects them to be is a priesthood, a holy nation. So it is right here in this chapter and in this verse. We find most strongly the idea that a holy nation is what God wants. Now, in my own thinking tonight and in my own presentation to you tonight, I want to take my time, and I want to think carefully. If I'm not careful, I'll get to just tumbling with my thoughts, and I don't want to do that. So I want to keep the pace going so that I can say all of the things that I want to say to you and yet not get to tumbling my thoughts out too fast for my own mind to keep up with them. But now this point is this holy nation. Let me take just a moment to talk to you about this idea of holiness. Holy and holiness are two of those words we have difficulty dealing with because of concepts and connotations that they have picked up because of the society in which we live. There are those who think of holiness as something having to do with some canonized saint that is now referred to as Saint so-and-so, therefore he has been made holy. And holiness has all sorts of concepts in the minds of people. A lot of people think about holiness as a matter of whether you are almost so overcome by your excitement that you jump and leap about. That's not what the Bible's talking about when it's talking about holiness. When the Bible talks about holiness, it is talking about being special. And let me explain a little bit about this idea. We're going to be talking about a lot of concepts as we're going along through the lesson. And I want to talk to you about this concept about holiness just for a moment. This is one of the things that God wanted Israel to have. And they had a real problem securing this holiness. And it really raises the question. And this is a question that we will probably talk about more tomorrow night. And that is, did God ever get that holy nation that he wanted? Did God ever get that holy nation? And the point that I'm going to make is, yes, he did. Yes, he did. But I want us to understand the issues that are involved in that in connection with our own salvation. So the idea of holiness is an idea of being special. It is the idea of being different. Now one might say, well, was this concept taught to Israel? Were they really taught what holiness was? And the answer is, yes, they were taught what holiness was. And if we say, well, where were they taught that? When were they taught that? Where in the scriptures did God really labor on the concept of holiness and what it is? Where did he do that with Israel? One of the reasons why people don't know where God did it is because we have neglected the book of Leviticus. As we think about the whole Bible, you know, actually a lot of people act like the Bible should consist of Genesis, Matthew, and Acts. Genesis, Matthew, and Acts. Well, there are actually 66 books in the Bible, and every one of them has its purpose. And the book in which the idea of holiness is taught more than any other is in the book of Leviticus. The book of Leviticus. Now then you could say, oh, well, then I can see why maybe I wouldn't be familiar as I should be with the concept of holiness. Because if holiness is taught in Leviticus, I haven't read and studied Leviticus. Therefore, I don't know maybe what I should know about the idea of holiness. But the book of Leviticus is where God taught about this idea of holiness. Let me demonstrate it this way. This is one of my favorite little parables. This is a Waldron parable. And this is one of my favorite little parables that I like to use to help you to see what I'm talking about. When I was young, when I was a child, I'd go to my mother and I would ask my mother, could I do something? And one of my great arguments was, all the other kids are doing it. And then Mama's answer was, but you are not other people's children. Did you ever have your mama tell you that? And the idea that Mama had was that being holy means being special. You're being special because someone expects something special of you. And I remember well those encounters with my mother all those years ago. It made an impression on me. Mama said, I expect something special out of you. I don't expect you to act like other people's children because you are my children. So not only did Mama expect something special out of me, she taught me that she did expect that something special. And the reason for it grew out of our relationship together. And that's the reason why we are to be holy, is because of the special relationship that we have with God. So we're going to continue the thoughts that we mentioned last night. And what I said last night was that we were going to look at why Israel broke the covenant that God made with them. But I did want to remind you of some of the concepts that we talked about last night and also mention some of the things we'll be talking about tomorrow night. But now I want to get into the idea of why did Israel break their covenant? I told you last night that while Moses was up in the mountain during the 40 days receiving the Ten Commandments and other aspects of the law, the children of Israel made a golden calf and they worshiped that golden calf. And when Moses came down from the mountaintop and he saw what Israel had done, he was terribly upset because he knew they had broken the covenant. They had broken the covenant, and the covenant was symbolized by the Ten Commandments written on those two tables of stone. Deuteronomy 4:13 shows that. 1 Kings 8:21. A number of other passages show that God considered the Ten Commandments to be the foundation of the covenant that he had. And the law itself was an integral, inherent part of that covenant. So when Moses came down and saw the people had made that golden calf and had turned away from God, he took the two tables of stone and threw them down and broke them. I'm inclined to think he did that because he knew the children of Israel had broken the covenant. Now, why did they do that? Why did they do that? The answer, there are several answers, but overall, they did not have the same view of their covenant with God that God had. Now, as we talk about this tonight, I want you to understand that the point is, I think that often we are guilty of treating our covenant with God in the same way. Now, what you and I need to understand is that it wasn't only Israel that had a covenant with God back there, but God has covenants with men. That's the way God operates. He seeks a relationship with men, and that relationship is defined by covenant. So you need to understand that you and I have a covenant with God. That covenant is dedicated through the blood of Jesus Christ. That relationship we have with God through Jesus Christ is defined by covenant, by agreement, by stated agreement, the same way the covenant of Israel was stated. They had that relationship with God, so we have a relationship with God, and it is defined by covenant. Therefore, we need to understand the misunderstandings that Israel had about their covenant in order that we may make sure we don't make the same mistakes. So let me go back to the basic relationship in that covenant. I will be your God, you will be my people. Now, what was Israel's idea of that? And their idea of it was that God is going to be our God. Hooray! Boy, we can use a God like that. And we need some plagues on the land of Egypt. He's handy to have around. We need to cross the Red Sea. It's good to have him around. If we can't drink the waters of Marah because they're too bitter, we have God. We're glad God is our God because he is really handy. And he can feed us the manna, and he can do all of these things for us. Yeah, but now you're also supposed to be the people of God. What does that mean? What did Israel have with that idea? What was their concept? Their concept there was, we are the people of God, as if it were an honorific position. It was a position they occupied. It was merely a name that they wore. And no matter what they did, no matter how they acted, they were still the people of God, and God would take care of them no matter what. That was the idea they had. Now, do you see any flaw in that? Let me tell you something else before we actually state what the flaw was. As you think about why you are a Christian today, why are you a Christian? If we all began to list the reasons why we are a Christian, we'd probably say, I'm a Christian because I don't want to go to hell. That's a good reason. Because hell is a place that any sane person ought not to want to go. I am a Christian because I want to go to heaven. And again, that's not a bad reason. Because heaven is a place that any sane person should want to go. I am a Christian so that God will forgive me of my sins. That's not a bad reason either. That's a good reason. It's an essential reason. I want to be a Christian so that I can pray to God and know that God will hear my prayers and that he will answer me according to his own will. Again, that's not a bad thing. But what is the characteristic here? What are we looking at? It's all one-sided. It's all one-sided. There's got to be more to it than that. And you know, when I talk about this series, every time I teach it, it's different. Because the ideas that come to my mind may be different. What I feel like telling you about at this time may be different from another time. So let me go ahead and tell you something else. While we've got the iron hot, looking at Israel's misconceptions that it was a one-sided thing. It was a selfish thing. And many times our idea of why we serve God, it's a one-sided thing. And what happens is that when we serve God from that standpoint, then we tend to serve God because of external factors rather than something that grows up within us that makes us want to. I put it like this. So many times, the children of God serve Him out of external compulsion rather than internal desire. Now that's a point we're going to emphasize greatly during this week. That's the reason I'm introducing it right now. So that it can work in your mind. So think about that idea of doing whatever we do out of external compulsion rather than internal desire. Now it happens that yesterday, I guess it was, Mo and I were driving around. And so the time came to fasten seatbelt. I don't like to fasten seatbelts, but I do it. And I did it then. And so Mo and I got talking about that. And I said, yeah, click it or ticket, as the saying goes. Now you think about this. If you fasten your seatbelt primarily because you don't want a ticket, are you doing that out of external compulsion or out of internal desire and motivation? You see the difference? Obviously, that's external compulsion. Well, I made the point to Mo, and he and I discussed it a little bit because we actually thought about that as a good point, a good illustration. I also wear my seatbelt because I know that it is good for me to do that. If I were in an accident, the seatbelt might make a difference in whether I survive or not. Therefore, there is a reason, and I see the reason, and it is a good thing, so that I not only do it because the law says I ought to do it, I also do it because I think it is a good idea, and therefore from within me arises the desire to do it. I'm going to have some more illustrations like that, but that was one of the big problems that Israel had. They did not view their covenant with God in the same way that God did. So they were thinking about it as, we've got this great God that's going to be there, and He's going to do everything we need Him to do. He's going to take care of us, and we're His people, meaning that He will take us any way we are. And that was just not so. Not so at all. So, remember that one reason why they broke their covenant was they had a completely different concept from God of what that covenant entailed. With them, it was a selfish, one-sided thing. But what did God think about it? What was God's concept? We need to look at that for a moment. So, when God said, I will be your God, in fact, there are a number of passages that I'd like for you to look at. Turn to the book of Leviticus. Let's turn to that book of Leviticus for a moment, and I want you to see some things here. We'll turn, first of all, to chapter 11. In chapter 11, verses 44 and 45. Notice these verses. God says, For I am Jehovah your God. Sanctify yourselves, therefore, and be ye holy, for I am holy. Neither shall ye defile yourselves with any manner of creeping thing that moveth upon the earth. For I am the Lord that brought you up out of the land of Egypt to be your God. Ye shall therefore be holy, for I am holy. So that the first thing that God had in mind was that I, your God, am a special God. If I am a special God and you're going to be my people, then guess what kind of people you're supposed to be? A special one. See that? So that the idea of God saying, I am a unique God, I am a different God, I am a special God, I'm unlike the other gods that you have dealt with. Therefore, you are to be unlike the other peoples of the earth. So that God's idea was that they should key in to Him as the special God, and they should draw their own specialness from the fact that He was special. Now, you know an interesting thing about the book of Leviticus? Even though we found this passage here in chapter 11 already, you get to chapter 18 and something happens. Turn to chapter 18 and I want you to just notice an expression that you begin to see over and over and over again. Let me challenge you, something interesting for you to do. Begin in chapter 18 and start looking for the expression, I am the Lord. And count how many times you find that expression from chapter 18 on. I have counted at least 43 times. And I'm pretty sure there are a few more than that. And the point that God makes in chapter 18 and 19. Now see, we don't have to notice the particular laws here. That's not the thing we need to notice here. But what we need to notice is that God tells Israel, you are to be this way because I am the Lord and you are my people. You know that illustration a while ago about mother and how mother expected me to be different because I was her child? Well, here is God telling Israel, you are to be different. You are to be special. You are to be holy because you are my child. So over and over again, here in chapter 18 and 19 and on and on and on, I'm just going to pick out a few spots here right quick. Let's look in verses 3 through 5 of chapter 18. After the doings of the land of Egypt wherein ye dwelt, shall ye not do. And after the doings of the land of Canaan whither I bring you, shall ye not do. Neither shall ye walk in their statutes. Mine ordinances shall ye do. And my statutes shall ye keep to walk therein. Why? I am the Lord your God. You shall therefore keep my statutes and mine ordinances, which if a man do, he shall live in them. I am the Lord. Look in chapter 19. Chapter 19, verse 2. Speak unto all the congregation of the children of Israel and say unto them, you shall be holy, for I, the Lord your God, am holy. Now keep that thought in mind there. Keep that thought in mind. You shall be holy, for I, the Lord your God, am holy. Hold your place, but turn to 1 Peter chapter 1. Now obviously we're going from the old all the way over to the new. 1 Peter chapter 1. Listen to what Peter writes here in about verse 15. Chapter 1 verse 15. But like as he who called you is holy, be ye yourselves also holy in all manner of living, because it is written, you shall be holy, for I am holy. You see that? Now Peter understands. The Holy Spirit, of course, understood. He is guiding Peter to help you and me as Christians to get the point that Israel missed. That because I am God's child, I'm supposed to act accordingly. If I am the child of God, I am supposed to live as becometh a child of God. God says, I am God, you are mine, I am holy, therefore you are to be holy. So I hope that everyone sees that. That was God's concept. We've looked at what Israel's concept was. There's another problem that Israel had, another misunderstanding. And that is concerning the law itself. And I want to see if you feel like we ever have any problem with this also. Israel looked at the commandments of God, they looked at the law of God, as an onerous mass of commandments that had to be obeyed when you would rather not. But you had to do it. Do I have to come to church Wednesday night? No, you don't have to. You can stay home. You can make other choices. Do I have to study my Bible today? No, you don't. You can remain ignorant if you want to. Do I have to? The very asking of the question, do I have to, shows that you have the same mindset that those Israelites had. They did not understand that here again was a big difference between the way they looked at the law of God and the way God looked at the laws which He had given them. And here again, I want to show you a number of passages that will help us to see that. Now, going back to Leviticus, let's go back, if you kept your place there. Just the thing I want to say here is, I just want to point out a few verses like chapter 20, chapter 20 and verse 7. Sanctify yourselves therefore and be ye holy, for I am the Lord your God. You shall keep my statutes and do them. I am the Lord who sanctifies you. Look in verse 26. You shall be holy unto me, for I, the Lord, am holy, and have set you apart from the peoples, that you should be mine. Over and over and over, I just want you to see how often you have that idea, holiness. Now then, turn to Deuteronomy. Deuteronomy is where we find so many of the passages where God was seeking to help Israel understand the purpose of the law. We'll start in Deuteronomy chapter 4. Chapter 4. Verse 2, Moses says, you shall not add unto the word which I command you, neither shall ye diminish from it, that you may keep the commandments of the Lord your God, which I command you. Turning the page to chapter 5, verses 32 and 33. And in fact, we wouldn't even have time to read all the verses we could read on this tonight. Like, look in verse 39 before we read 32. Chapter 5, verse 29. Oh, that there were such a heart in them that they would fear me and keep all my commandments always, that it may be well with them and with their children forever. Now then, verses 32 and 33. You shall observe to do therefore as the Lord your God has commanded you. You shall not turn aside to the right hand or to the left. You shall walk in all the way which the Lord your God hath commanded you, that you may live, and that it may be well with you, and that you may prolong your days in the land which you shall possess. Do you see that God is telling Israel that the law and your keeping of the law is the way I'm going to bless you? And that's the reason why God will not bless someone who does not walk in his way. Because the way of God itself is designed by God to bless those who walk in it. See that? Let me illustrate it this way. I enjoy sweets. So far, the only problem that I've had from it is I constantly need a bigger belt. But now suppose I were a diabetic. In other words, you're looking at a person whose interest is just sort of nominal. It's just sort of minimal. It's a matter of weight and things like that. But over here is a person, it is a matter of life and death. It's a matter of life and death. Now then, as long as it's a thing that I'm doing that I don't really feel like I have to do it, I don't see the necessity for me to do it, then I'm going to have more trouble walking by the rules. And the rules are going to be something that appear to just be confining to me. But if I understand that the choice that I have before me is life and death, and if I walk in the way which I am to walk, I have life. If I don't walk in that way, I have death. It makes all the difference in the world. And so God wanted Israel to understand that the way which I command you to walk is for your good. Look in chapter 6 of Deuteronomy. And the Lord commanded us to do all these statutes, to fear the Lord our God for our good always, that he might preserve us alive as at this day. Now in many of these passages that we are looking at, the idea is that you may live, that it may be well with you, that you may prolong your days in the land which you shall possess. God is going to bless them through the law. But their idea was, it's a pain in the neck. Look at this big stack of laws here. Look at all these commandments. Why, I can hardly walk without stumbling all over these commandments. That was the ugly and negative attitude that made it so difficult for Israel to walk in the ways of God. One time I heard of a father who told me the way he taught his son that lesson. And I thought it was a pretty good one, given the fact that the son did not break his neck, which he might have done. But the father was talking with his son about this. And why bother with walking in the scriptures? Why bother with that? So the father said, okay. He took a hole. There was a hole in the house. So he put various things out in the hall, a chair, maybe a toy, and just kind of littered the hall there with it. He said, now, I'm going to have you walk down the hall. That's representing life. And he turned the light out. And the son started trying to walk down the hall. And it was bang, stub the toe, step on something that hurt the foot, nearly fall, maybe did fall. And he just had a terrible time. And then the father turned the light on, said, now see if you can do it. In other words, with the light shining, the boy could see the way. And he could see the dangers. And he could avoid the pitfalls. And it really was not impossible. It was easy. He made it. He made it down the hall because he could see. And when the law of God, when the revelation of God, when the will of God is made manifest to us, it shines upon our way. I had a woman tell me one time, she said, oh, the gospel you preach is too narrow. And I said, no, it is not the gospel is too narrow. It is you're not happy. You're not happy to walk in the way. I teach 5th and 6th graders at Athens Bible School every day during the school year. And one of the last things I did with them this year was, as I was talking with them about concepts like this, I said, there are some people who look at the way of God, the laws, and this is the way Israel did. They look at it and they say, oh, that's too narrow. That's too narrow. Well, it's sort of like this. Even though that is narrow, if I just carefully walk through here, I can walk through there. I made it. But if I were not happy to stay in the confines, and I want to go this way. No, I want to go this way. Then it's not that I don't have enough room. It's that I don't want to be there. And when people have the problem of walking in the ways of God, it is because they don't want to be there. It is not because the laws themselves are impossible or that it is such an unhappy situation. That was what Israel had in mind. We come back to that point I made to you earlier. Are we Christians and do we walk in God's ways from external compulsion, or do we walk in them because of internal desire and motivation? Let's turn to the book of Jeremiah. There are some really, really fascinating passages in Jeremiah chapter 7. We'll look at two chapters. Chapter 7 and chapter 11. Now, you've already studied enough that you ought to know the background when we read these passages. Chapter 7 and verse 21. Jeremiah 7, 21. Thus saith the Lord of hosts, the God of Israel, add your burnt offerings unto your sacrifices, and eat ye flesh. Now then, let's stop just a moment. Ordinarily, they could not eat the burnt offerings because they were all burned up. But God is telling them, you might as well go ahead and eat the burnt offerings too, because that's all you're getting out of these sacrifices. How about that? You know that if God says, go ahead and eat them because that's all you're going to get out of them, there's certainly something wrong with what's going on here. Well, now notice, verse 22, for I spake not unto your fathers, nor commanded them, in the day that I brought them out of the land of Egypt, concerning burnt offerings or sacrifices. That's not what I told them. When he brought them there to Mount Sinai, God did not say, if you will indeed offer me loads of sacrifices, then you will be my people. Do you see that? That's not what he told them. And that's what he means right here. That wasn't the deal, God says. I did not speak to them in the day that I brought them out of the land of Egypt concerning burnt offerings or sacrifices. But this is the thing I commanded them, saying, hearken unto my voice, and I will be your God, and you shall be my people. and walk in all the way that I command you, that it may be well with you. That's what I told you. And he's saying to Israel here, over 800 years later, you didn't do it. You didn't do it. You haven't done what I told you to do. Chapter 11. Chapter 11, verses 3 through 5. Jeremiah is given instructions to go and preach to the people, picking up in verse 3. You say unto them, thus saith the Lord, the God of Israel, cursed be the man that heareth not the words of this covenant, which I commanded your fathers in the day that I brought them forth out of the land of Egypt, out of the iron furnace, saying, obey my voice and do them according to all which I command you. So shall you be my people. In other words, this is the way you will be my people, by walking in my ways, by living as I instruct you to do. So shall you be my people, and I will be your God, that I may establish the oath which I swear unto your fathers, to give them a land flowing with milk and honey as at this day. Israel got the idea that it doesn't matter whether we keep the law or not, as long as we offer sacrifices. And let me make a point to you and me. If we ever get the idea that because I come and sit on a bench here and go through the motions of singing and bowing my head when prayer is given, putting money in the plate and so on, then Monday I can go out and I can use any kind of language that I want to use. I can go out and behave dishonestly if I want to do that. And I can divide my life up into compartments, and I can have my religious compartment where I'm really, really religious on Sundays in that compartment. But then when I'm in my business, then I'm going to be dishonest and I'm going to cheat. I'm going to do everything I can as long as I'm coming and sitting on the bench. I'm not saying that you're doing that. I'm not accusing you. I wouldn't do that. But I am saying that we need to give attention to that. And if in our lives there is hypocrisy like that, then we are doing exactly what the Israelites did and what God tells them about here in Jeremiah 7 and Jeremiah 11. And he's saying you cannot do that. You think that what I want is for you to come and go through some little rituals. And if you just go through the little rituals, that's going to make everything else all right. And that is not so. That is not true. God wants us to worship Him in spirit and truth, but He also wants us to walk in His ways. And when we don't do that, then it is not acceptable unto God. You remember that famous character in the Bible named Saul, who went to do the bidding of the Lord, except he didn't do the bidding of the Lord. He was told to exterminate the Amalekites because it was the judgment of God that they be exterminated. But instead he brought back Agag alive to make him a trophy. He brought back the best of the animals. He did not do what he was told. And when he told Samuel, oh, behold, I have performed the commandment of the Lord, Samuel says, well, what meaneth then the bleating of the sheep, the lowing of the oxen that I hear? What is that all about? Oh, those, the people brought those back so that we could offer them unto the Lord your God. Samuel said, behold, to obey is better than sacrifice, and to hearken than the fat of rams. For rebellion is as the sin of witchcraft, and stubbornness is as idolatry and teraphim. The thing that Saul needed to understand and the thing that Israel needed to understand is the thing that you and I need to understand, and that is that what God prefers is that we live a lifestyle of holiness. And when we sin, then we have an advocate with the Father. But the idea is not that that gives us the right to sin all the time and live any old way we want to. That is not correct. That is not correct. John said, these things write I unto you that you might not sin. That's the objective. That's what God desires, is that we live a life of holiness. One of the principles, one of the concepts that I have taught about this idea of sacrifice, purity Spiritual purity is achieved through cleansing. Holiness is maintained through harmony. Now ponder that. Purity, when we are defiled spiritually, purity is obtained by the cleansing of the sacrifice. But then holiness refers to a lifestyle that is lived in harmony with God's will. So you have purity through cleansing and holiness through harmony. Harmony with God's will. Sunday, I used this expression. I said sacrifices were always intended by God to be remedial, meaning to remedy sin. Sacrifices were never intended by God to be a way of life. Do you remember what Paul wrote in Romans 6? What shall we say? Shall we continue in sin that grace may abound? God forbid. Certainly not. Why not? Why? Why not? Because if we're not perfect, we won't get to go to heaven. That's not what he said. He said, do you not know that all we who have been baptized into Christ have been baptized into his death? We were buried, therefore, with him through baptism into death, that like as Christ was raised from the dead through the glory of the Father, so we also should rise up to walk in newness of life. In other words, the point he's making is that when we become Christians, we make a commitment. Is that the first bell? That we make a commitment. Now, brothers and sisters, here is the meat of the idea. When we become Christians, we make a commitment that we will walk in the ways of God. And we need to understand that. We need to help our children. We need to help everybody understand that, that when you become a Christian, you are making a solemn commitment. I really appreciate your listening so well. And I enjoy doing this so much. And I just hope that there is some coherency in what we're saying tonight. I hope that you can understand. We've mainly talked about why was there the failure in Israel. And the failure was because of the different concepts that Israel and God had about the nature of the covenant and about the role of the law itself. There were great differences between them in that. So we'll continue to explore these ideas as we continue our studies tomorrow night.